from the very first hole that we drilled, we knew where the mineralized zone was. That's kind of the beautiful part of the geology that we're in. The oxide zone was kind of mappable from day one from the magnetic geophysics that we did. And so we're batting 1,000. Like that's really what it comes down to in terms of an average is concerned. So, you know, if you're a baseball fan, I mean, that's pretty exceptional. And from a geological standpoint, that just really speaks to the continuity of the system. We're through 86 drill holes now, and all 86 drill holes have confirmed oxide mineralization within each hole. Obviously some, you know, greater than others, but we're getting not only 100 meter intercepts, but in some cases we're getting 400 meter intercepts of oxide mineralization.
Good day, everybody. I have Mike Steer here again, CEO and director of Saga Metals. How are you, Mike?
I'm good, Steve. Thanks for having me back on. Much appreciated.
You bet. Mike, it's been 8 months since we last got on. For those who don't know, who haven't seen the first interview, who haven't followed your story before, if you'd be so kind as to start us off with your website, your ticker, where you're trading.
Yeah, absolutely. SagaMetals.com is our website. Go take a look. Ticker symbol, TSX Venture. We're SAGA, Saga, very simple. OTCQB, we're SAGMF.
So, Mike, if they haven't seen the first interview, you know, we're just trying to learn about the Saga. If you can give us the 30,000 foot view, you know, what is Saga today and maybe how did it evolve from maybe the original lithium story into what it is now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you've only ever looked at us from that first interview and haven't taken a look since, I mean, we're almost a different company now, just in terms of, you know, the level of advancement towards some of our more significant projects. Yeah. So the, you know, the 30,000 foot, level, you know, Saga Metals, we founded back in January of 2023. We completed a straight IPO in 2024. We are a diversified critical mineral company. So we have a portfolio of strategic and significant assets, in kind of the eastern, northeastern part of Quebec, and then, you know, throughout all of Labrador. So the commodities that we span is titanium, vanadium, rare earths, uranium, lithium, and iron ore. And actually, if you check out our news on our website, we actually just divested our Northwind iron ore project. So down to five projects. Again, just showing people that, you know, we have the wherewithal to create value while focusing, obviously, on our more flagship assets, creating value from our non-core assets. And we, you know, we really demonstrated that with the Rio Tinto partnership that we garnered back before we went public when we were a private company in the summer of 2024. We executed a pretty significant option agreement with them whereby they optioned our property from us for, you know, with the ability for them to earn up to 75% of our project by them putting, you know, $44 million into the ground, plus some treasury payments to us, you know, close to $700,000 and a few other things. They did subsequently move away from that, you know, almost a couple of years later. They changed their corporate mandate away from some of these earlier stage projects. But at the end of the day, we probably created about $2.5 million in non-dilutive value for our shareholders. We got the project fully back, and we picked up the Garneau Titanium project, which is in that eastern part of Quebec, about 80 kilometers away from Rio Tinto's Lactio project. You know, which some could say is potentially a similar target to Lactio. It's got a very similar geophysical signature. So again, just taking all these opportunities to create value where we can, and, you know, continue to advance our flagship asset, which is the Radar Titanium Vanadium project, which I'll get into because that's just changed so dramatically since we last spoke.
So when we last spoke, tell me where you guys are now in the stage, and if you can tell us about the results that you've seen and kind of what's changed so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So back when we spoke, I mean, we were still talking, you know, just about to advance our mineral resource estimate drill program over the Trapper Zone. I think at that point we hadn't even fully started the program. We'd only drilled the 2,200 meters in the Hawkeye Zone, which, if you recall, was kind of our proof of concept drill program, you know, proving continuity in oxide mineralization and uniformity in terms of grades that we were seeing for titanium, vanadium, and iron. Since then, it's exploded to we're north of 22,000 meters total drilled on the radar project to date, you know, with over 20,000 meters drilled in the Trapper Zone specifically for the completion of our mineral resource estimate technical report, which is slated for Q4 of this year. So, you know, if you're able to pull up the map, you know, for this interview and show your viewers, you'll be able to see that we've just systematically moved our way up from Trapper South all the way through the transition zone and into Trapper North, which is that kind of 4 kilometer access trail that we built over the oxide layering strike that kind of takes us up to that old forestry road. So that's kind of where our access has been. And we're almost done. We're probably about a week away, just a few more drill holes left to kind of complete the program. And we anticipate coming out with not only an inferred aspect of the resource, but also an indicated aspect. You know, and that's just the exciting part in terms of the drilling. We've also been working on some pretty pretty significant metallurgical studies as well, which I can get into more detail too.
Yeah, so my understanding is that you guys had a pretty impressive batting average. If you can tell us just kind of how many holes we're talking about, what was the batting average, and then what did that tell you about the size scale, the consistency, as well as, you know, what this might become?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, when you're kind of getting going and you're doing this much drilling, you know, you obviously want to, in most cases, in most projects, especially if you want to use gold as an analog, you know, you're having to drill and try to map and try to vector towards where the heart of the mineralized zone is. From day one, from the very first hole that we drilled, we knew where the mineralized zone was. That's kind of the beautiful part of the geology that we're in. The oxide zone was kind of mappable from day one from the magnetic geophysics that we did. And so we're batting 1,000. Like that's really what it comes down to in terms of an average is concerned. So, you know, if you're a baseball fan, I mean, that's pretty exceptional. And from a geological standpoint, that just really speaks to the continuity of the system. We're through 86 drill holes now, and all 86 drill holes have confirmed oxide mineralization within each hole. Obviously some, you know, greater than others, but we're getting not only 100 meter intercepts, but in some cases we're getting 400 meter intercepts of oxide mineralization. That is a staggering, you know, length to be considering, especially when, you know, the top global project from a vanadiferous titanomagnetite, VTM, which is our style of geology as it relates to, you know, this titanium vanadium iron deposit, which is the Pangziwa deposit in China, you know, their oxide intercepts are anywhere between 1 and 30 meters. And we're drilling, you know, at vertical depths of almost pushing 500 meters. And these intercepts that are, you know, 100 to 400 meters, like it's incredible. We're obviously, you know, blown away, and it's been quite exciting to be able to continue to put out that news to the market.
Mike, you talked about inferred and indicated, and I don't know if the market's priced that in yet, but if you can first of all tell us the difference and why you think you're confident that you can graduate to the next step with more confidence.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think anything to do with our mineral resource estimate is priced in at all at this point. You know, the difference between inferred and indicated, just trying to keep it super simple for everyone, is your inferred is more, it's more of a kind of a, I guess, like a looser estimate. Like you're able to take more liberties in terms of of how far you can stretch your calculations based on the structural measurements that you take. And that's usually because for inferred, people are the distance between each hole is much greater. And so that's why it's inferred, because it's not as kind of honed in, or, you know, closer distance between holes. So we've actually done 100-meter spacing and really tightened the distance between the holes, so you can be much more confident. And that's why you can get to that indicated classification in terms of your resource, because just the measurements and the structural information that you have is just to that more granular detail. So you're able to put it up a class in terms of, you know, what you're able to classify these resources as. So for us, getting to that indicated right off the bat was just an important standpoint, because it just kind of does bolster the confidence in your resource, and just allows you to push forward through some of the other key development stages by jumping right to that metric right from the beginning. And for us, and sorry, I know you're going to ask another question here, but to just kind of double up on that, the whole point is, and again, our batting average being 1,000, we know where the system is. Again, it's been mapped from day one, 86 holes hitting oxide mineralization. It made sense for us to do this very tight grid and do closer spaced holes and get to that indicated, because we've been able to track the system and we know where it is. You know, when you don't quite understand the system, or you don't quite know if you're going to hit the mineralized zone that you want, going to inferred is usually the first step, because you just don't 100% know where it is. For us, you know, we know we have, like, this, the trapper zone is almost 3.5 kilometers in strike. And again, we're systematically drilled the entire thing. So,
Mike, if you can, let's talk about Labrador a little bit. If you can just tell us the benefits of being in Labrador, maybe the challenges, what are the biggest challenges you typically run into there? And if you can tell us about, you know, the First Nations, as well as the permitting timelines and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, for those that don't know, and we probably discussed it last time, you know, Newfoundland and Labrador is actually a top-tier mining jurisdiction. I mean, Canada in general does fall high up in ranking, but specifically, you know, in terms of this province, it's always within the top 10. You know, you take some of these other up-and-coming, like Greenland gets a lot of attention, but, you know, for Fraser Institute's ranking of jurisdictions, it's, you know, down in the, it's often the 50th or 70th percentile. And so, you know, a lot of people think, oh, okay, Labrador, you know, you're going to have middle of nowhere, lack of infrastructure. But again, like, our whole thesis for Saga was about this jurisdiction being underexplored, very overlooked, and just having these opportunities for significant projects just kind of waiting to be discovered and explored in greater detail. But one of the things that we did right from the beginning to de-risk our assets is made sure that when we picked up a project, it had some level of infrastructure, knowing that, you know, in 2023 and now into 2026, that it's going to be hard to advance a project that is lacking a significant amount of infrastructure. So again, for our radar project, which is our flagship asset, we have road access right into the property. We're 10 kilometers from our claim boundary to the town of Cartwright, where we employ, you know, 10% of the town, which is huge. I mean, to be able to have a workforce that can wake up in the morning and go to work and go back home and have a nice meal with their family and go to bed and wake up the next morning and go to work, that's not a common thing in this industry. You know, to have a regional airport, a deep water port right there in town, again, 20 kilometers from the actual mineralized zone, that's significant. A lot of people think, oh, you know, is drilling in the winter time there, like, can you drill all year round? The majority of the drilling that we've completed on this project has been done in the heart of winter in Labrador, and I think that just again speaks to the infrastructure that we have. So, you know, there aren't, you know, really those types of challenges as it relates to this project. The communities, First Nations communities in that are amazing, nothing but supportive. You know, Michael Garrigan and the team have done a fantastic job of building those relationships, and again, just, you know, what we've done with employment and all the rest of it. It's just been a fantastic opportunity. And a permitting, you know, same thing. We really have not come up across any red tape. This is a jurisdiction that wants to see exploration, wants to see mining. It's been a pleasure, to be honest, having these projects and kind of building Saga Metals in Labrador.
Mike, can you give us key milestones for us that you're looking at? I know you mentioned some, but and can, if you can also tell us in light of how much money you have in the bank and how far it takes you.
Yeah, absolutely. So back in May, you know, we completed about a $10.2 million flow through financing. We've got about seven-ish million in the till right now. Obviously, if you look back in our news, we announced towards the beginning of July that we brought a second drill to site. So, you know, you're obviously do save in terms of economies of scale, and you know, your overhead stays the same, but you're getting more core to the ground faster. But that does mean obviously you burn through some of that money a little bit quicker. Nevertheless, like, it's keeping us on track. Major milestone again, like I said, we're going to be finishing this mineral resource estimate drill program here in probably about a week, which is very exciting. Then it's just finishing logging, cutting, sampling, sending the core to the lab to get the assays back. We've already had the QP for the MRE technical report out to site, so that's done. They're already starting to build the framework for the report. And we want to get that technical report out by Q4 of this year. And because we've gone to all the more significant steps as far as the metallurgical work and everything that we're doing, you know, we're confident that we can actually also get a preliminary economic assessment, a PEA, out by Q1 of 2027, which again is a little bit faster than I think most people are used to when it comes to these more robust technical reports. So very, very significant milestones forthcoming for the Radar project. And again, something that we haven't quite touched on yet is that metallurgical component. Again, coming back to the Pangzhihua deposit in China, it's a, you know, 1.3 billion ton deposit. It's been mined, I believe, for the last 20 odd years or so. I think they've mined about 146 million tons. Their concentrate grade of vanadium pentoxide, as an example, is about 0.3%. Of course, we haven't done metallurgical testing across a significant sample size of our deposit, but the preliminary work that we've done, just even over the Hawkeye samples alone, as far as concentrate grades are concerned, is coming back in upwards of 0.9%. So for us, again, to be able to show the continuity and size and scale of this 20-kilometer oxide corridor that we've identified, and then you start to, you know, frame in the fact that our concentrate grade is shaping up to be quite significant as well. I mean, it's starting to propel the project into good company in terms of some of the more significant deposits on the planet. You know, then to follow up on that, we did some work with Tomas Resources. They have a proprietary regenerative chloride leaching system for processing these types of deposits. We did a bench scale test running our ore from the Trapper Zone through there, and came back with on the recovery side of things. So not specific to defining your concentrate grades, but from a recovery standpoint, when you actually go to separate out these elements, how much of it from the ore can you actually recover? You know, we were getting 90.8% titanium, 97.4% vanadium, and 91.5% iron in terms of recoveries. And keeping in mind that that was just simply running the material through the system, that's, you know, no optimization techniques were used. The team that did it doesn't, you know, have any kind of mineralogical analysis of the ore, which can be very important in terms of those optimized metrics to make sure you can recover the most possible. So the fact that we hit those significant numbers right off the first you know, the first test of it is very, very encouraging, very exciting. And again, this isn't midstream processing that we're talking about. You know, this isn't creating a magnetite concentrate or an ilmenite concentrate where you get the majority of your titanium from. This is actually a downstream, you know, their process works to create those end use products that can enter, you know, the downstream market. So it's pretty exciting for us. And again, this all builds towards the mineral resource estimate and everything that we're doing to fast track this project.
Mike, I want to shift a little bit. I want to ask you about Northwind, first of all. What was the, if you can tell us the decision that was made there, the term, as well as the thinking behind it and how it benefits shareholders. And then secondly, if you can talk a little bit about Wolverine, the yep. potential there and why, and is this a rare, should Saga be a rare earth story as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, with respect to Northwind, again, like, we picked that up. The Labrador Trough is famous for these iron deposits. We saw some claims that were coming available to stake that had a component of New Millennium's 2013 resource calculation that they did. And so we thought, okay, well, if we can pick up this ground and kind of button this up, it gives us a foothold into this area. For again, we staked it from the government. So again, was not a burden in terms of initial cost to acquire the project. It has also not been a burden in terms of the cash required to just do some exploratory work over the last couple seasons since first acquiring it. And we sort of always knew that there would potentially be this strategic opportunity to amalgamate it with some other claims in the area and kind of build a bit of an iron complex. And we've kind of spent the last couple of years since owning it kind of refining those relationships and just other people in the area. And you know, Orion Iron Ore kind of came to the table here. And that's exactly what they're building is this iron complex and putting together a robust set of claims throughout all these other major deposits in the area to kind of take advantage of sort of the renewed activity that's happening with Valet and Cyclone in that area. If you're not familiar, they executed about a $138 million deal, Valet supporting Cyclone in their development. So just a strategic opportunity to create value. We get about 4 million shares for Saga in that deal. We get to maintain a 2% gross overriding royalty on it. I'll take a board seat on there to make sure that our interests are obviously kept at the top of mind as they advance the company. So for a non-core asset, I think it's a big win for our shareholders in terms of not immediate value creation, but down the line, right? And so if when you take into consideration what we paid for it, the amount of money that we put into it in terms of exploration and just that bump in the share position that we get and what could be built there, I think it presents a great opportunity down the line. And again, it kind of now, we've built ourselves up to about 6 assets, brings us back down to 5. You know, the whole point was always to be a diversified critical mineral asset and find these unique ways. And I think that junior companies and finding unique ways to create value is the way that you create the most opportunity for shareholders, as opposed to just being a single asset where it either works or it doesn't. If it doesn't, what do you do? We don't really have to be in that situation because we have multiple high potential projects. And so segueing to Wolverine, we recently completed that acquisition. Again, this was not a project that we just came upon, you know, a few months prior to acquiring it. We actually sort of did due diligence and investigated acquiring it back in 2024 before we even went public. Didn't quite work out at the time, but the private entity that owned it went and did about a 25 RC drill hole program on it last year and just kind of built up more confidence in the mineralized system that's identified there. So, you know, for us, again, are we to become a rare earth company? I think the narrative is still, we are a diversified critical mineral company with these kind of ability to kind of give shareholders access to these different commodities. You don't need to go invest in a rare earth company. You don't need to go invest in a titanium company or a uranium company singularly. Just you can invest, you know, and support and become a shareholder of Saga Metals and have access to these different commodities within one company. You know, for us, the Wolverine project represents a 26 square kilometer mineralized potential. It is probably the easiest way to describe the geology is that it once upon a time, about a billion years ago, it was a volcano, right? So imagine all that fluid, that hot magma coming up from deep below the surface up through the volcano, bringing all kinds of elements with it, and then kind of cooling in the different segments and settling, to what it exists to today. The crazy aspect of it is that we had a petrologist do some work, some microprobing analysis of the core that we obtained from the company while we were doing our due diligence. And I mean, he even jokingly asked the question, you know, did this volcano just erupt yesterday? And the significance of that is meaning that it's just so highly undeformed, which is a unique aspect when you're talking about a geological setting that occurred so long ago in our past. And it's just quite exciting for what that means in terms of the mineralized potential and what's remained intact for all of those years. We've already, you know, have historical drilling done that, you know, it's brought up to 2.03% TREO. We're averaging between 24 to 28% heavy rare earths, which again is kind of what the majority of significant players in the industry, governments, Canada, US, European nations looking for these rare earths are obviously focusing on these heavy rare earths that feed directly into high performance magnets and, defense applications and you name it. We're finding these things at Wolverine. I think the other exceptional aspect of it too, again, lends itself to the infrastructure. We're 12 kilometers from Tidewater, you know, so when you ask a question, like, is this a project that's also, in the middle of nowhere, like something like Voisey's Bay, it's not like them being obviously further up north. Of course they are near Tidewater as well, which is a benefit to them. And we are, you know, too, right, being 12 kilometers, so.
So, Mike, looking forward to the inferred indicated transition and following your story. For people who want to ask you further, more questions, where did they reach out to you? And if you can tell us your ticker, your website one more time.
Yeah, absolutely. Take a look at our news releases. Take a look at our website. We have contact information there. info@sagametals.com. There's a 1-800 number on there as well that you can talk to. Ticker symbol again, TSX Venture, SAGA, SAGA is our symbol, OTCQB in the US, it's SAGMF.
Well, Mike, great to have you back on. For our listeners, I am not currently an investor of SAGA. SAGA has not paid for this interview, and this is not, I'm not giving investment advice, so please do your due diligence. And one of the ways you can do that is to reach out to Mike. Thank you for following the story. Mike, great to see you again.
You as well. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.